You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft minor league experts, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. The Arizona Fall League has begun play, featuring many of the best prospects in baseball. Time now for our experts to name their early all-prospect teams, players that intrigue them the most. Jim, we'll start with you, and we'll start behind the plate, a catcher.
Yeah, you know, the catcher who jumps out the most to me in the Fall League is Wilson Contreras of the Cubs, who has really done about as much to boost his prospect stock as I would say just about any catcher in the minor leagues this season. We all knew the Cubs had a deep system. When I was kind of in charge of our Cubs top 30 prospect list come into the year, he didn't even make the top 30. Wound up at midseason when we updated it, put him at number 10, and I think when we update it again in January, he might even sneak into the top 5. Really interesting kid. He signed as a third baseman out of Venezuela in 2009, began converting to catcher 3 years ago. I know there's a lot of talk about Kyle Schwarber and can he stick at catcher, and I think Wilson Contreras is going to render that moot because I think Wilson Contreras is definitely going to stick at catcher and Schwarber's going to wind up playing every day in outfield corner. But he has a chance to be an all-around guy. He can hit for average, hit .333 this year in AA. He's got at least gap power. I think it could be average home run power. And he's got a strong arm, and he's made himself into a pretty solid receiver. So one of the more interesting catching prospects in the entire minors and definitely in the AFL.
Yeah, and he loves to catch. This isn't one of these, well, we'll see how it works, and maybe I can always move back to third. He really likes it back there. The Cubs Minor League Player of the Year, named so by their organization, and understandably so, especially if you're just looking at guys who spent the whole year in the minors and just really took off. Had a breakout this past year a lot because he played winter ball in Venezuela a year ago and got to sort of pick the brains of a lot of more veteran guys both on both sides of the ball. And it really helped his confidence and helped him realize what he needed to do to improve and succeed at a higher level, and he was able to do that. And I agree. I think Kyle Schwarber is probably going to be an outfielder from here on out, or at least up until the point when Contreras maybe catches a little until Contreras gets there to become a full-time backstop at the big league level, probably in the not-too-distant future.
Jim, first base.
First base, I like A.J. Reed. It's interesting. It's not a great position prospect-wise, I don't think, in the minors right now, but it is pretty strong out there in the Arizona Fall League. Reed had the best statistical season of anybody in the minors this year. He led the minors in homers, RBIs, on-base, slugging. Obviously, ops, if you're leading on-base and slugging. This is on the heels of basically being the best college player in the country the year before. He won every major college player of the year award in 2014 at Kentucky, where he led the nation in homers and also won 12 games with an ERA of about 2 on the mound. Big left-handed power. The interesting thing with him is the Astros were a little disappointed. He showed up. He's a big, burly guy. He showed up to spring training weighing about 280 pounds, which is not the way to endear yourself to your organization before your first full season of pro ball. But he lost the weight and really took off, hit as well in double A's he did at Lancaster, which is a launching pad. This is a guy, if you look at the Astros, Chris Carter's hot. Postseason aside, first base was not a position where the Astros got a lot of production. And if Reed continues to hit like this, I think he could push his way into their lineup, maybe in the second half of last year. I mean, he was a two-way guy at Kentucky, like I mentioned, actually drafted as a pitcher by the Mets out of high school. But he's a power hitter all the way. It's big-time power. He does not strike out excessively. He draws a lot of walks. He's an okay defender. He's not much of a runner, but he fits that first base profile. This is a guy who could hit for a lot of power and hit for a solid average and a good on base percentage. And he's a first baseman I like the most in the AFL.
Really good choice, and I think I could have easily gone with him, but I decided that I'm going to go with Dominic Smith of the Mets, mostly. Because he had two doubles in his first game here. No, he did have two doubles, and it was a microcosm of who he is as a hitter right now. One was down the left field line, one was down the right field line. He made several very good plays defensively at first, which is part of the game that people don't necessarily notice. He's a very good defender. He just has a really, really good approach at the plate. And this year he kind of had a bit of a breakout. 139 hits on the year, hit over 300. The one thing that people, don't know about is how the power is going to come, and he hasn't hit for a ton of power, but he's not really overly concerned with that. The Mets have preached to him, learn how to hit, and the power will come. The doubles will turn into homers, and he definitely has extra base ability. A really, really good approach to the plate. But, because he is a first base only guy, the power is going to have to come for him to be good. And I think the Folly could be a really good springboard for him to the upper levels of the Mets system next year.
Jim, what about second base?
Second base, I think the best guys who are going to wind up being big league second basemen in the AFL are probably guys who play other positions now. I mean, a lot of your better big league second baseman moves. So I'm going to cheat a little bit here and go with Daniel Robertson, who was one of the better hitters in the Fall League last year as a shortstop with Mesa when he played for the A's. Then he got traded in the offseason in the Ben Zobrist trade, and now he's with the Rays. He's back with Mesa. Has played, mostly shortstop in the minors. He gets the job done there, but he's not the quickest guy in the world. I think he winds up at second base. He's making up for some lost time. He missed about half the year this year with a hammock bone injury in his left hand that cost him a couple months, but was really impressed when I saw him out there last fall. He does everything you want to see at the plate. He uses the whole field. It's a short stroke. He works counts. He doesn't chase pitches. Very polished hitter. He was very polished hitter last year when he was 20. He obviously a year later, he's only 21. I think there's going to be more power in there. He's 6'1", 205. It's a sturdy build. I think we're looking at a potential, 270 hitter or so, 270, 280, with maybe 15 or 20 homers a year. And I think while he's continued to develop at shortstop, I think he winds up being a second baseman in the long run.
And he is going to see some time at second in Arizona, so that certainly makes sense. I'm going with another guy who's sort of a shortstop turned second baseman. It's Alex Blandino. He was a kid out of Stanford that the Reds took 29th overall in 2014. Had a really, really good first full season in the Florida State League. He got bumped up to Double A and struggled a little bit, but not necessarily with his approach. The walks were still up. I think there is some power there as well, but probably not the kind of power you want to see at third. So second base is a better spot for him if he's not going to play shortstop, and he's going to be playing second base regularly in the Fall League. It's not just he'll get some time at numerous positions. He's a second baseman during the AFL, and I don't know if the Reds just want to get a really long look to see what that looks like. A lot of people think that's where he should end up. They were pleased with how he played shortstop during his summer debut and even his first full season, but as the game speeds up, I think second base is probably a better spot for him. But he's got a very good approach and a good feel for hitting, and he should hit for average and probably give you double-digit homers, good offensive production from that position in particular.
Over to the hot corner, Jim, third base.
I'm going to go with the guy who probably has the toughest name to pronounce in the Arizona Fall League, and I think I have this correct, Trey Michalshewski. I don't know how great I did that. I think it's Michalshewski of the White Sox. Probably has the longest name in the Arizona Fall League, too. He's a guy who's always intrigued me since he was a high school kid coming out of Jenks High in Oklahoma. Overslot signing for $500,000 in the seventh round in 2013 for the White Sox. And, it just intrigues me. I think he's a pretty good athlete for a third baseman. He's a switch hitter. He's only 20 this year. Hit 259 with 46 extra base hits in high class A. Pretty good swing from both sides of the plate. Decent approach. Moves pretty well at the hot corner. I think he has a chance to be an average to solid contributor kind of across the board at the hot corner, and that's why I like him the most. And I know Jonathan needs to, I think, curry some favor with Astros fans after spurning A.J. Reed, so I think he may go Astro here at third base.
I am, and mostly because I didn't want to try to pronounce Trey's last name. And I'm not, you know, I didn't want to go taxi squad player. So there you go, because he's only going to play twice a week. But that said, yes, I am going to go with J.D. Davis to curry favor, as you suggest, with Astros fans. And, you know, you talking about A.J. Reed, you talked about the production in Lancaster in the California League, and then obviously A.J. Reed went on and put up silly numbers in Double A. J.D. Davis did not leave Lancaster, so there is still that question mark of, well, can he do it away from that launching pad? You know, he had a really good year from a power standpoint. 26 homers, 100 over 100 runs batted in. A lot of swing and miss, 157 strikeouts, but he did draw some walks, and it's something that he continued to work on. And you know, August was probably his best month. He hit 382, and the strikeouts were down a bit. So obviously, it's something he's trying to find that balance between being really aggressive, which, you know, helps him drive the ball and having a better overall approach, and that's what he's working on in Arizona. He did go deep in his first game in the Fall League. This is a guy who did move around a little bit as a defender and actually was a relief pitcher as well in college. But he's settled into third base and looks pretty good over there. Obviously has arm strength, but I think he's going to be fine over there, as do the Astros, and I think it'll be interesting to see. He's the kind of guy who, you know, could go through the Fall League and struggle, you know, with the higher level of competition and swing and miss a lot, or he could really use it as a springboard up to Double A next year. And I think we're going to see the latter.
Over to shortstop, Jim.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty easy choice here because J.P. Crawford of the Phillies is the best overall prospect in the Fall League. I'm sure Jonathan will agree with that. I'm sure if we survey 10 scouts, we'd probably get 10 guys telling us the same thing too. You know, first-round pick in 2013 by the Phillies. You know, it was interesting. He wound up going 16th. I was not at MLB.com at the time. I was still at Baseball America, and I bet Jonathan remembers this the same way, though, that you know, there was a lot of rumbling he could go kind of in that 11, 12, 13 range, and I think now there are a bunch of teams wondering why they passed on J.P. Crawford. I mean, he's in the draft, you don't often see guys who are definitely going to stay at shortstop, and J.P. Crawford's definitely going to stay at shortstop. And on top of that, you don't often see guys who are definitely going to stay at shortstop who could hit, and J.P. Crawford is going to be a star, I think, in both aspects of the game. I mean, he's got a potential to – you know, I don't know if he's super flashy as say, you know, looking at rookies came up this year, as say maybe a Francisco Lindor, but he's definitely a plus defender at shortstop. And, I mean, he can hit, you know, left-handed bat, you know, only 20, got to Double-A this year, more than held his own, walked more than he struck out. I think he's going to have I think he could be a 15-home run hitter as well as hitting for a very high average. You know, Philly obviously going through some rough times right now at the major league level, but they do have some prospects in their system. And I think J.P. Crawford's a guy who, depending on what they want to do with service time issues, could be up at some point next year if the Phillies wanted him to be.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add. Obviously, he's one of the best shortstop prospects in all of baseball at this point. Corey Seager's the only one who's ahead of him, and obviously Seager's doing what he's doing at the big league level and in the playoffs. And I think Crawford, you're right, he's not quite as flashy as Lindor, but I think there are some good comps just in terms of the all-around game. You know, so we'll see, you know, what he uses the Fall League for. He's way ahead of the curve. You know, I guess you don't have to hope that the Phillies don't rush him, given that they're kind of in rebuilding mode. But I have a feeling that he's probably going to sort of push the envelope and knock on the door sooner than, you know, maybe a lot of people think, even though, you know, he doesn't turn 21 until January. So some more development time may not be a bad thing. Maybe the Fall League allows him to put on some finishing touches and lets him see what he needs to work on so he can contribute in Philadelphia at some point next season.
Rather than get specific in the outfield, let's do three outfielders, Jim.
Okay, I'll go three, although I'd love to go four. If we were doing softball, I know who my short fielder would be. But I think outfield's one of the strongest positions in the fall league, and in terms of just guys with pretty strong tools across the board. You've got Austin Meadows of the Pirates, who some guys thought had the best high school tools in 2013 draft when the Pirates took him ninth overall. You've got Brett Phillips with the Brewers now after the Astros included him in the Carlos Gomez-Mike Fiers trade, and he was kind of a key prospect in that deal. He was part of that great Houston 2012 draft that started off with Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers. And you know, he needed a little bit more development time, but scouts have always been high on him. He was a late bloomer in 2012, was one of the better high school athletes available. Really nice year this year, 309 with 16 homers and 17 steals and got to Double-A. And then I was tempted to go with another product of the 2013 draft, and Clint Frazier, who, you know, I will say this, I don't know, he probably gets cheated less than anybody at the plate in the fall league. I mean, he has an electric swing, and he is not shy about unleashing it. But I actually like Lewis Brinson with the Rangers. That guy fascinates me. He might be the best high school athlete, or definitely one of the best in the 2012 draft. You know, he's been a pretty consistent 20-homer, 20-steal guy in the minors. The only thing that's really held him back are some minor injuries. He's developing some discipline at the plate. But I would call three of those guys five-tool players, although in Austin Meadows' case, the arm's probably below average. So you probably have 14 of the 15 tools you want to see with those three outfielders right there. And Clint Frazier is a very close fourth for me.
Yeah, it's. I think I would have no problem with Frazier as my short fielder, or you know, maybe right center and left center. And you know, it's interesting because I think both he and Brinson are guys who needed to work on their overall approach and plate discipline. You know, and have done so. You know, Brinson really all season. You know, injuries aside, Frazier has been interesting because everyone knew coming out that he was a really free swinger. He's very aggressive. You don't want to take that away from him because it is kind of what makes him good and exciting. But you look at what he did in the second half this year, because the first half he struggled a little bit, and then he really put it together in the second half. The walks went way up, the strikeouts went down, and as a result, he hit 325, 422 on base, and 539 slugging in the second half. So, starting to put it together. You know, he and Austin Meadows from the same town in Georgia, I think they're going to be kind of not compared because they're they have two very different styles, but people will be checking in to see how both of them are doing. Meadows made it up to Double-A, hit well in the playoffs. Frazier spent the year in the Carolina League and didn't get the bump up to Double-A, but can use the Fall League to get him ready for that move.
All right, guys, let's go to the mound, starting with left-handed pitcher, Jim.
I like Sean Manaea of the Athletics now, another one of these guys who's been traded. I guess like Daniel Robertson, he was also in a Ben Zobrist trade. Robertson went to Oakland, went from Oakland to Tampa Bay in the Zobrist trade, and then when Oakland traded Zobrist to Kansas City, Sean Manaea was the best guy they got. You know, I think the reports on Sean Manaea are still the same ones that they were coming out of the draft when he signed for $3.55 million as a supplemental first-round pick in 2013. Had a chance to go number one, but he had a hip injury that kind of held him back, and then the signability factored in there as well. But, I mean, he can pitch off his fastball about as well as anybody in the Arizona Fall League. It has good velocity. It has good life. He gets a good extension and plane on it. I don't think the slider or changeup, either one of those, is a plus pitch yet. I'm sure those are going to be the focal points of his development in the Fall League, but he has so much success pitching off that fastball that, you know, he's been able to breeze through Double-A at this point.
I think Manaea is kind of the obvious choice for left-handed pitchers, you know, and totally good one, too. I think he might be ready to contribute in Oakland at some point next year, so it should be fun to see what he does in Arizona. I'm kind of going with a little bit of a wild card here with Ian Clarkin, who, honestly, is a little bit of a surprise to me that he's in the Fall League. For people who remember him, he was taken at the very end of the first round of the 2013 draft by the Yankees. Sort of bad timing-wise, the little pre-produced video talked about how he hated the Yankees, and then he got drafted by them, so he had to apologize over and over again for that, which is kind of silly. You know, he was okay his first full season. They were very careful with him. He pitched okay in the South Atlantic League, and then he didn't pitch at all this regular season. Should have been in the Florida State League. Had some elbow troubles. Did not have surgery, but did not have Tommy John surgery, but hasn't pitched. So we're talking about a guy who last pitched in the South Atlantic League coming to the Arizona Fall League to kind of restart. So that surprised me a little bit. I'm guessing that maybe he was throwing in their extended spring training and maybe at Instructs, and they liked what they saw, so they thought he was ready for this. And if he throws well here, it obviously is not going to make up for a whole entire lost season, but it could help him kind of get back on the path that he was on as a fairly advanced lefty for a high schooler, one with three at least major league average pitches with very good command to boot with it. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table in Arizona.
And finally, guys, right-handed pitchers. Jim?
Yeah, and I think this is one I'm sure we'll probably agree on also. Alex Reyes, to me, kind of like Crawford, clearly, and maybe even more so, stands out as the best pitching prospect in the league. We don't have to go into his whole backstory here, but he was in New Jersey as a high schooler, went back to his roots in the Dominican, and wound up signing for $950,000 as an international free agent. He can reach 100 miles an hour with his fastball. He's got a power curveball. He had crazy numbers in the minors this year, struck out 151 batters in 101 third innings, 2.49 ERA, 197 opponent average, got to double A. All that despite having some mild shoulder soreness that cost him about a month. So they're just making up for some lost time, getting him some more innings. Hey, he's one of these guys with a special arm, and even though he's only pitched about 35 innings above A-ball at this point, I think with a strong fall league, it wouldn't shock me at all if the Cardinals needed him, if he was on the Cardinals big league roster at some point next year, because you just don't see arms like this come along too often.
Yeah, and you don't see arms like that in the fall league too often. It tends to be hitter-friendly. Pitchers, if they've had full seasons, they don't necessarily come here. Used to maybe get some more top-end pitchers when the draft signing deadline was later, so you'd get a Steven Strasburg who would come straight from the draft and hadn't pitched over the summer at all, and that doesn't happen as much now. So he's as exciting an arm as has been in the fall league in quite some time, and I think he could definitely use that as a springboard to help out in St. Louis and give them yet another homegrown product on that big league roster.
Now we bring for you live and direct from the Arizona Fall League, the Philadelphia Phillies' second-round draft choice in 2013 after a stellar career at the University of California. We welcome to the podcast from your Glendale Desert Dogs catcher, Andrew Knapp. Andrew, great to have you with us on the show. You started the season in the Florida State League in Clearwater and batted 262. The Phillies promote you to Redding, and you go nuts. 360, mm-hmm. 419 on-base percentage, 56 RBIs in 55 games, 11 homers, had individual hitting streaks of 16 and 17 games. You're named the Eastern League Player of the Month for August, recently named the recipient of the 2015 Paul Owens Award that goes to Philadelphia's top minor league player of the year. Andrew, tell us, what happened to you in Double A?
Well, honestly, I think I just got a little bit more selective. Earlier in my career, I'd be swinging at a 1-1 changeup that probably wasn't a good pitch to swing at. And then once I got moved up to Double A, I just kind of started laying off those pitches and started flipping some counts to 2-1, 3-1, and started getting some fastballs. So I think that was the biggest adjustment I made.
Andrew, I mean, were you at all surprised when you got that bump up? I mean, you were doing okay in Clearwater, but you certainly weren't setting the world on fire like you did once you moved up, as Ed laid out with those numbers. What was it that the Phillies saw? I mean, were you making those sort of adjustments in your approach that made everyone comfortable that you could handle the jump up a level?
Yeah, I think the last month there in Clearwater, I started making those adjustments. I think part of it, too, was the advancement behind the plate, being able to kind of handle the game, handle the pitching staff more and work with those guys. So I think that's what they saw. you know, sometimes a change of scenery is all you need kind of to get a little boost and a little confidence. So I think that helped too.
What are you working on, looking to work on specifically, Andrew, in the Arizona Fall League? Is it mainly focused on the defense? I mean, it seems like that's usually on the to-do list for catchers. Are there some further offensive adjustments you're looking to make as well?
Well, yeah, I think offensively it's just continuing to do what I'm doing, just get more consistent with it. I think defensively is kind of one of those things I just want to tighten up. Tighten up the receiving, tighten up the throwing. You know, we worked a lot behind the plate this year, off the field, you know, kind of working about the mind game a little bit. So that's kind of one of those things is trying to be able to manage a pitching staff and work from behind the plate. So that's kind of what I'm focused on.
You're still sort of, I don't say behind, but, you know, developmentally, just because the Tommy John surgery that you had, I would imagine, just reps-wise, I would imagine in Arizona being able to catch bullpens and working with some of the higher level pitchers here will help you feel more and more comfortable with just the, you know, all the nuances that you're still sort of getting a handle on.
Yeah, definitely. You know, these are guys who know what they're doing on the mound, so, you know, you can get a ton of work in the bullpen, and I'm working with Pass here with the Dodgers, you know, in the facilities, in the cages, and on the field, you know, on the side field throwing, and so that's going to be good. You know, kind of get a little bit more downtime here, less playing, but, you know, you get to work on the side, so that's good.
Hey, I think you just alluded to your manager there, Glendale, Billy Hasselman. How much does it help, you think, having a manager? How much are you going to be able to pick his brain of a guy who caught in the big leagues as long as he did? And then kind of along those lines too, Andrew, you weren't the first member of your family to catch at Cal. Your father, Mike, did. He went on to AAA. How much help has your father been throughout the career? Because I guess that's have to have been a tremendous resource, a guy who caught as long as he did to pick his brain about various aspects of the position.
Yeah, you know, it's throughout my career, I've pretty much been surrounded by a ton of catchers. You know, this year we had Dusty Watson in Redding and Evan Hass here and my dad. You know, it's huge. You get to pick those guys' brain, and they've been there before. You know, they've done it. They've caught over 100 games in the year, and they know how the body feels and kind of how it's mentally draining too. You know, you catch every day, and you just kind of get worn out. But it's been awesome to be able to pick their brain and kind of see how they do it and just gain that a little bit of experience from them as I'm going through it.
Andrew, we're so happy to have you on the show, and we wish you the best of success. What you did in Reading, we hope continues for years to come. Thank you so much for being with us. Guys, thanks so much. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks for listening, everybody, to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast.